Hello, and welcome to Danny Golden's podcast featuring the lovely and talented licensed marriage family therapist, Miss Heidi Bacani.
Hi, Danny. Third time's a charm. We're going to this one again, I'm sure.
We are. And we've already come up with our topic for our next one. So you'll have to stay tuned and watch our next episode for that. So if for all of those people who missed episode 8, we discussed competition and how to gain your competitive edge. And we also talked about my book, Life Game On, A Competitor's Guide, which you can get on Amazon. So if you haven't checked out the podcast or my book, please do so. I think you'll enjoy it. Yes. Thank you, Heidi. Heidi read it and liked it. For all those who care. Today, we're going to talk about boundaries and the importance of having and creating boundaries. So really excited about this podcast. In my past life, I was boundaryless. And now I have my boundaries and it's made my life much more simple and enjoyable.
And safe.
Yes. But before we get into the meat and potatoes, Heidi, please do the disclaimer.
Okay, real quick, for all the viewers and listeners, please keep in mind our podcast is for the purpose of enjoyment, entertainment, information, not meant to be a substitute for talk therapy in any way. But please enjoy.
Yes, please enjoy. So something that's really interesting is that when Heidi and I were having this conversation about this podcast, we generally do like a meet. Brainstorm. And she asked me if I love that I'm talking about you like you're not here. She asked me if it would be interesting to talk about the history of boundaries. And I was like, what do you mean there's a history to boundaries? So Heidi, please take the wheel and talk about the history of boundaries, because I find it very interesting. And I think our listeners and viewers will as well.
Sure. So I asked us that question because, or wanted to explore that because it's not a concept that I learned early on when I was studying psychology. It was very rarely mentioned in, the textbooks that I was reading to prepare myself to be a therapist. So it was just a curious thought, like, when did this word start really showing up? Because I hear it all the time, and I have heard it a lot over the last like 10 years or so,
right?
Or 20, I guess. But not when I was in school. So I just was trying to connect the dots as to like, okay, was this like an early theory that someone had, or was this like a theory, a more recent like issue that our society started to really explore? And what I discovered in my research was in multiple articles and different books, it looks like it rose out of the late 80s and early 90s during the self-help movement. It really became popular when written about by Jeff von Vonderen. He was the first one to write about the concept of boundaries in his book, Tired of Trying to Measure Up.
Yeah. I just love that. Right? It's such a good title. I feel like we should all, who's tired? I know, who's tired of me?
Exactly. The whole room stands up.
Right, right.
Yeah, great title. And even in this book, though, he only writes one page on this concept. So really very new. It's actually a pretty new concept when you think about like how long. I mean, psychology is a new genre of like study, I think. But this concept of boundaries is even newer than like the really old stuff that's been around since the 60s and 50s. So anyways, one page in his book is what it amounted to in the 1980s. And he, on that page, he writes about the invisible barrier that tells people where they stop and where other people begin. So pretty broad, pretty general kind of statement. But basically, he explains that we all have a right to have our opinions, feel our feelings, and protect our privacy in terms of our physical being. So,
right.
But to like make that explicit, I think was a really helpful thing that he did for society.
Yeah.
It was sort of that implicit. It was implied, but like to make it very clear that this was allowed, I think was kind of groundbreaking. And he wasn't a psychologist. He was actually a motivational speaker and interventionist. So someone that helped people with addictions. He helped facilitate like interventions for people who were trying to help others break out of the cycle of addiction.
Yeah.
So I appreciate Jeff von Vonderen for doing all that. And then in the 90s, there was a psychotherapist named Ann Catherine who published a book titled Boundaries. Mm-hmm. And actually, the title was Boundaries, Where You End and I Begin. So I think that's where the dots connect between like his book and her book, because there's very like similar wording to how he describes boundaries and how she describes it. And in her book, she explores even more how a breach of our physical, emotional, or sexual boundaries can be harmful to our physical and psychological health. So I think she helps she helps further the concept, I think. And then after that, it's like, there's tons of books written about boundaries, and it's a word that's often used and actually often misused today. I found several articles on this topic in The Guardian, The Washington Post, and The Harvard Business Review, where they talk about how it's a term that's like really abused, unfortunately, now. There's an article specifically that I wrote, that I read from The Guardian, written by her last name, Shirless. I'm sorry I didn't write down her first name, but she talks about, in her article, she talks about how this is a dominant metaphor on how human relationships should work. It's like it's implied that everyone should know where everyone's boundaries are all the time, which is not the case. I think it only can happen through communication.
Right.
But she really explores like this issue, how problematic that can be when we make assumptions about other people's boundaries, not having boundaries ourselves, or like how people impose their boundaries on other people.
Yeah.
And the specific example she cites is she writes about Jonas Hill and his ex-girlfriend, how he would use his boundaries to control her behavior, and ultimately it resulted in like a lot of emotional abuse. Because she like talks about, or she writes about, the exchange between him and her, and how he publicly posted an exchange between him and herself, where he allegedly like sent her messages on her Instagram account telling her to remove certain photos of herself, like, these are my boundaries, and this is what I need you to do to make me feel safe in the relationship, basically, is what he was saying. That she needs to take down photos of herself wearing bathing suits and stop having friendships with unstable women and stop surfing with men. Like, he was using the term boundaries to explain why he needed these things to feel safe. So that's just a very blatant example of boundary control.
Right. Yeah. Control disguised as boundaries.
Boundaries. Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
Exactly.
Wow.
Yeah.
Hmm.
So that's just a little of the history and
yeah.
And what I found when I was doing this research that it was interesting to me that, yeah, it can happen that people can misuse this concept that's supposed to help you feel safe, you know, to actually abuse and control other people.
Yeah. I mean, unfortunately, I'm not surprised that something that's used to help people can be used to target and manipulate people. Because unfortunately, I think, unfortunately, I think as a species, we are very clever and creative. And sometimes it's not a good use of that power, right?
Right, right.
Our ingenuity can get the best of us. But I do find it interesting that this concept wasn't really popularized until the 90s and really now, which doesn't make me feel so bad about being boundaryless in my past life, because this wasn't something that people talked about. People just didn't talk about.
Yeah. Right.
Really.
Right.
You know, we talked about what we wanted to do or current events. We didn't talk about our feelings.
Exactly. Exactly.
That was not. Yeah.
Yeah. And our parents were not like everything. A lot of what we learn is from the modeling that our parents demonstrate. And so it was not in their generation that this concept came about. So it's not surprising, you know, that we didn't learn.
Yeah.
We didn't really learn about this until we were in our 30s or 20s or, you know, I'm much older than you, so.
No.
in my 30s.
No. No, but you're right. You know, people are a product of the environment they grew up in. So if you're, you know, parents were immigrating during that time, they were more concerned with building a life or their parents. Right. So then that behavior was modeled by their parents. And then, you know, our parents were going to work and do what they needed to do. They weren't thinking about how am I feeling? What's my purpose? You know, that wasn't popular or even a thing back then.
Yeah.
And I think with the luxury of time and having those issues sorted from our previous generations, more security. We have the luxury now of being able to think like that. It's a luxury and a pain in the butt at the same time.
True. Very true.
Right. With freedom comes a double-edged sword. But I'll take it any day. I'll take that freedom. So when you were talking about boundaries, I was thinking of when I was boundaryless and how I went to therapy and like really would bring it in these scenarios that and talk about them with my therapist. Like, oh, I got this text message. Like, how do I respond to this? Or do I have to respond all the time? And, you know, even that's like a boundary, like with the phone. Like I noticed that this weekend, like I am much happier when I'm not on my phone. And it's not like I'm scrolling or whatever, but like if I'm listening to music or I'm waiting for a text message because I'm trying to set up a swim the next day, like that would be, you know, proper. But to have it close by and be like, you know, futzing with it, that to me is not something I would do on holidays. So it's not something I want to do like on my time off, you know, whether it's a weekend or at the end of the workday or things like that. So that's a personal boundary I am starting to set more with myself is not having the phone around me. Another thing is that I used to have this friend that would say, I'm coming down and we're going to hang out. Uh-huh. And he would never ask me if we were going to hang out. He would just say, I'm coming down and we're going to hang out. And this used to drive me crazy. So I remember going in and asking my therapist and saying, how do I deal with this? And she's like, well, you say I'm busy. I was like, oh, it's that easy? Like I can just say boundaries. I'm busy. Right. I think it's when you're boundaryless, you're like, what do I do? This person's imposing themselves on my time and my, you know, and for me, like time is one of the most valuable things for me, you know, I think time goes ahead of money in terms of, something that I value. So I'm like, I don't want to hang out with this person. Not that there's anything wrong with them, but this isn't in my plan.
Right.
And so little things like that, like creating personal boundaries for myself were huge. And then the last example I'll give would be in the workplace where I was boundaryless. This obviously wasn't a good thing because if I'm boundaryless for myself, then it leaves the opportunity for other people to take advantage of that. And whether they're doing it on purpose is irrelevant because the point is that I'm not creating the boundary. So, you know, it's like basically having this stable with no door on it and all the animals are coming in and I'm expected to take care of everything. And that's just not possible. Right. There was no
recipe for burnout.
Right. Right. Mm-hmm. Which is exactly what happened. So, and one note I'm reading right now from when we were doing our brainstorm that I wanted to share with the audience is that when I did start instituting boundaries, one of the biggest things I learned was it feels wrong the first time you do it. So it feels wrong the first time, like if someone's like, are you busy? And like, let's say I have a great friend ask me if I'm busy and I adore them, but I don't want to do anything. I really don't. I love them to death, but I will want to have some Danny time. Mm-hmm. Right. It feels weird. And so it's always interesting to me. The psychology behind that was always very interesting to me. Like, and the analogy I used on our other recording that was too echoey that I want to share with the audience is like, I liken to like for all you hikers out there, or, you know, if you're just even walking on a dirt path, if you've been living your life boundaryless and not saying no to things or just, you know, yesing everyone to death and like not speaking up for your needs, which we, I would say comfortably, I think we've all done at some point in time in our lives.
Right.
You're going to continue walking down this paved path that you've created for yourself. And the moment that you start saying no to things like, no, I think I'm right. You're going off the trail and you're creating a new path. And so your ankles are getting, you know, the brushes and the leaves and everything's hitting you on the legs. In this analogy, I'm wearing shorts. So I'm feeling all these burns and these bruises and these sticks. And they're like little, they're not like big pains, but it's a pain in my butt. And, you know, I remember asking the therapist about it at the time, like, why does this feel like I'm doing something wrong? Because, you know, in therapy, you're learning, like, do I go right? Do I go left? What's the right direction? What do I do? And, you know, if it's all based on feeling and, you know, now you're telling me to, like, you know, follow my good feelings, why is this thing that I'm supposedly doing for myself that's supposed to feel good, feel bad?
Right.
And the answer was that because you're changing a learned behavior, right?
Yeah, exactly. Okay. It's something different. It's something new that you're doing. So it's going to feel unfamiliar. It's going to feel uncomfortable. Yeah.
Like dieting.
That's new for you right now.
Right, right. It's
going to be uncomfortable.
Yeah. Yeah. I was telling Heidi, I'm like, got on the scale and I was like, not happy with it. And so, you know, the process of dieting is not, I don't think it's fun for anybody. But
and that path is not as clear. That's why it's uncomfortable. It's not as clear as the old path that you had been walking, doing over and over again. So eventually it becomes more automatic, more clear, like where to walk.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes. And how to choose yourself and speak up for your needs, because your needs are like these little cells and peoples in your body, and they just want to be heard. And if they don't, then you eventually lose it.
Yes.
In my opinion. Yeah. At least that's what happened to me. I can only speak for myself. So Heidi, thank you. Heidi, from a licensed marriage family therapist perspective. Oh, we went over the why do these second guessing feelings and other negative feelings can occur, but more so, I would love to hear some tips on how to institute boundaries.
Oh, okay. Let me give a little background on boundaries again and some examples before I launch into tips. Just a little brief summary of what boundaries can do for us. One, boundaries allow us to take better care of ourselves by asking for respect both physically and emotionally. I mean, your example about setting boundaries with yourself at work and with other people, you know, I think ultimately that is self-care, a way that you would have, you know, you would have taken care of yourself emotionally and physically probably. And it also helps build intimacy and trust in our relationships. When we ask for what we need, we're making ourselves vulnerable to the other person. And it's in that vulnerability where the connection actually deepens and occurs. So very good for building intimacy in a relationship. And it's also a way for us to honor ourselves and what we need physically, emotionally. It's a way to connect with ourselves. So connection. It's all about connection. It's all about communication and connection. And when we use boundaries, that's what the payoff is. It's a connection with ourselves and another person.
Yeah.
Examples of you shared some good examples of professional boundaries, like the other ones that I have are avoiding office gossip and also not working through lunch breaks. We talked about burnout, and those are the working through a lunch break is a guaranteed, you know, way to burn out at work, I think, or not like leave after you're supposed to leave.
Like stay at the office till 10. Yeah.
I used to leave work and come back like at 8 o'clock at night. And then
I thought I was bad. I would just stay. The club. Yeah.
You think you're bad. No. I mean, I'm human too.
I think that's it's very comforting to hear. Yeah. No, I mean, yeah. I remember getting home at like 11 or midnight but the usual time was I would leave at 10 or something for a while there. It was definitely not,
I know,
first one in, last one to leave, not healthy.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. A lot of us learn that way.
The hard way. The boundaryless way. Yeah.
Okay, personal relationships. Examples of boundaries and personal relationships. So asking someone to stop criticizing what we're wearing or our weight or what we're eating. That's allowed. You're allowed to ask them to stop.
Well, I don't know why they're doing that to begin with, but yeah.
Well, yeah, I know.
I know. Unsolicited opinions, my favorite other topic.
Yeah, right. Sometimes people will ask us something uncomfortable that causes us to feel uncomfortable, a question that's not appropriate, perhaps. And it's okay to say, that makes me feel uncomfortable. That question makes me feel uncomfortable. And you don't have to answer. You're right. Allowed to not answer the question.
Yes.
Boundaries with ourselves. So going to bed at a certain time to meet self-care goals. That's a good boundary to have with ourselves. And, you talk about protecting your time, like how valuable your time is.
Yeah.
And having rules while online dating to protect your time. That's an example of protecting our time.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I'm with you. I value my freedom and my time a lot.
Yes, so, very much. Yeah.
So those are some examples. And then, okay, we can move on to tips.
Wonderful.
So
I think I want to thank you for clarifying, because some people might be like, what's a boundary? Because that's what I said when I first learned about it. Yeah. What's a boundary? I've never heard this term. What do you mean? I've been living in a hole of work. And now I've come out and the light's out and I'm like, what's a boundary? Oh, I could have avoided this. Oh, okay. Wonderful. I didn't, but, so yeah, thank you for sharing that with the audience.
You know, we have these awakenings, throughout our life.
Yes, we do.
I mean, I'm revisiting boundaries for the 100th time, you know, while I was preparing for our podcast. Cause I need reminders. I need reminders of like what my boundaries are. Cause I'm trying to keep myself safe.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good goal.
Yeah. All right. So steps, there's a few steps. It's easier said than done. I'll just say that. So everyone get your pen and pad ready, because there's a few steps here. For setting successful boundaries.
Take some notes.
Take some notes. All right. So step one, anytime we feel a physical sensation that feels off or uncomfortable. An example would be tension in the jaw, sensation in the stomach. Like that description of like the hair on the back of my neck was standing up when, you know, this person was talking to me. Those are physical cues that our body is trying to inform us of, that we are reaching a personal limit or an edge in a social interaction.
Okay.
Or during some sort of conflict. And those are not there for no reason. Those are there to really inform us to take some sort of action. So physical cues and emotional cues, those are what we need to pay attention to when we're trying to understand where our boundaries are. And this can be done through a process of maybe note-taking or journaling at the beginning of the day or the end of the day. Or if you have a practice of like checking in with yourself and doing some breathing, like, or a form of meditation, those are the ways that we can actually check in with ourselves and notice any of those physical sensations or emotional cues that tell us like we're uncomfortable with something.
Mm-hmm.
That's the first step, is just learning to recognize how we're feeling in our body and in our emotional state.
Right.
Once we do that, we would need to identify like what edge or what boundary was being reached by another person. Okay. Or with ourselves. Mm-hmm. You know, like when I'm not sleeping enough, like mm-hmm. noticing that I am can't function the next day, and taking the time to notice like, okay, I need to get more sleep tonight. I need to mm-hmm. set a boundary with myself to like be in bed by like 9:30 instead right. of 11:30.
yeah.
Like that's what that identifying our edge looks like, is
mm-hmm.
noticing when we're not comfortable and identifying what the cause of that is. let me see. So that essentially is step two, is identifying that edge that we were feeling. And then sometimes like the boundary is with another person. And so it takes some courage to work up to communicating about the conflict our edge being our limit being pushed or that person like pushing our edge.
Mm-hmm.
And so giving ourselves time to work up the courage to talk about it may include mm-hmm. things like talking to a friend, talking to a therapist about it, writing about it, breathing, doing breath work or meditation work before we talk to that person
mm-hmm.
so that we can feel as emotionally regulated as possible and have sort of like a script or a plan of what we want to talk about. That is going to be part of how we resolve that edge or limit being like challenged by another person, you know, letting them know that they crossed that boundary or like pushed us past our limit or our edge.
Yeah.
Give ourselves, again, with giving ourselves time also includes after having the conversation, knowing that you don't have to respond right in that moment. Give yourself time to think about a thoughtful response instead of reacting, because sometimes mm-hmm. we're going to disagree with what that person says, like, they may have not meant to, but it really, really hurt us in some way or harmed us in some way. So giving ourselves a chance to have a thoughtful comeback or response.
Mm-hmm.
And then be open to feedback. it may take a few attempts at having a conversation to either meet a compromise or meet at some compromise or decide that there's, you know, no resolving this issue, agreeing to disagree. Or maybe this has happened like one too many times now with this person. And so it may lead to the end of a friendship or a relationship. So I guess that wasn't too many steps, but resolving boundary issues, sometimes it can be more than just one conversation. So.
Oh yeah. It'll take multiple times. I mean, I feel like when you were talking, I'm laughing, thinking mm-hmm. about, you know, all these times I use therapy to really address my boundary issues. Like, yeah. What do I do when I'm at a work party and someone asks me something uncomfortable and I don't have the answer? And she was like, you can excuse yourself to use the restroom. Like, I can. Yeah. What if I get this text message and it's imposing on my time and my freedom? You can respond and say, I'm busy. I can. Right. You know, it was mm-hmm. this awareness that really, I had the power and the tools in my tool belt, but not really knowing how to access them at the time because I'd been so out of practice. And so, right. you know, I think that's another thing I would say to the audience is giving yourself grace as you go through this process and through yeah. life, because as you said yeah. before, it's not something you like master and then you're not addressed with it. Like life is about boundaries and staying in your lane and you know, choosing, yeah, lifelong work and choosing yourself over and over again. And sometimes right. we're better at, you know, depending on what's going on in our life or what obstacles we're facing, it's better. And other times when it's, you know, it's not. And so it's right. giving yourself that grace and going, oh, what am I doing wrong here? Oh, I'm not being, and I wouldn't say it's selfish because I feel like a lot of times in my past life, when I wanted to just hang out by myself and not hang out with people that I thought were my friends, and it was probably a sign that they weren't people I wanted to hang out with because right. I didn't want to hang out with them. But, you know, I got called selfish a lot for just wanting to be by myself. And I think, you know, that's the difference too, when you're instituting boundaries is how other people respond to them says a lot about them and not you.
Right.
And that was a big lesson for me was like the people who are going to get offended when I want to do something for me, well, let me reverse the roles. If I asked someone to do something and they kept saying that they were busy, I would either stop asking them or, yeah. you know, I would say, let me know when you want to, you know, hang out. Getting upset and arguing with them about how they're feeling and what they're in the mood for is not the right approach. And I think giving people that grace and that freedom that I want to have is mm-hmm. part of the exercise of this too. Like, how do I want to be treated when the roles are reversed as well? So yeah, very, very interesting. Great tips. Super helpful.
Thanks, Danny.
Thank you. Yeah.
It's a complex issue because I think it touches on trauma also.
Yeah.
And that's why I think I'm so intentional about like having so many steps because I want people that are viewing this that have trauma to know that it's okay to have time to take time to do the work because it's like it's such important work and it's not easy. So to be like very gentle with yourself when you're doing this, I think.
Yeah.
Is the intent in making it so multi-step.
Yeah. No, that's very helpful. And the more something activates you, the harder it's gonna be to institute that boundary. So like you said, you can yeah. walk away from it.
Right.
Take a deep breath, go for a walk, journal, and then, you know, institute that boundary and ask yourself, like, why am I being so affected by this?
Yeah.
And you might not know, and having the grace of not knowing at the time.
Right. Exactly. So
it's
exactly.
hard. It's really hard to not have all the answers all the time.
right. Yeah. Trial and error.
Yeah. Right. Okay, Heidi, episode 9 question.
Okay.
Will you please share a time when you created a boundary that was crossed and how you dealt with it?
Sure. So we've answered this question multiple times now. I've answered it multiple times. And again, I'm going to talk about it. And this is a recent event that came up with my beloved Nye and a neighbor. Mm-hmm. And the background, quick background story is that this neighbor has been asking us to put a stop to working on our 300-year-old house. And, you know, we've been very consistently and diligently explaining to them, you know, how much we appreciate that they're so patient with all the workers coming in and out. And we live under the understanding that neighbors are going to be neighbors. And so there's stuff is going to happen, and it's okay because that's just part of living in a city with other people. Mm-hmm. But they're so used to us not being here, I think. And we're only here in this house July through November. Mm-hmm. They just had become very accustomed to us not being around. And so it was a huge disruption to their life, I think. And we feel bad about that, but at the same time, we have to have work done on our house. So,
right.
So during their last visit to us, my husband and I decided to squash these conversations by telling them that, being neighborly is not about cooperating when things are going well. It's cooperating when things are not going well. And yeah, that most things can be worked out when two people are willing to work together. So mm-hmm. we're asking them to work with us because we really need their help to make these projects happen. And it's not we were planning on having projects nonstop, forever. Right. It was just until we had a new septic tank, you know, things that needed replacing on a 300-year-old house.
Right.
So
you're saying that you weren't just willing, you were I want all this work done. You actually needed it.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Right. And I mean, genuinely, of course, we don't want to disrupt their life, but
right.
I don't know how we're not going to disrupt it, you know? So,
and that's not the intention either. The intention is to get everything resolved.
Yeah. Yeah. And as quickly as possible so that they don't have to deal with it anymore.
Right.
So, you know, the more we cooperate right now while things are getting done, the sooner it'll get done. And then the more they'll have their, you know, the sooner they'll have their utopia back.
Right.
So,
yeah.
Yeah. That was the best example. So far, I would have brought up something else if there was something new, but that was it recently.
No, that's a great example. Yeah. And I think, you know, a lot of us live in neighborhoods with neighbors and, you know, there's different challenges with that. And it is about accepting each other despite our differences and learning to be respectful. And I think that's not even about neighborly. It's just about being good humans.
Like getting along with other people.
Yeah. Right. We don't have to see eye to eye. We don't have to love each other, but we don't need to go around and berate one another either. We can be kind and leave it behind.
Yep.
So last thing is PSA and books.
All right. So PSA and books. Let's start with books. The two books that I think would be good for the readers to have access to. The first one is by Anne Catherine, the lady that I mentioned earlier, who brought up
Where You Begin and I End.
Yes, that awesome book. That one.
Yeah.
Anne Catherine.
Okay.
And then the second book is I love a workbook, so I had to throw a workbook in there. Sharon Martin, LCS, she's a licensed clinical social worker. She wrote a workbook called The Better Boundaries Workbook.
Got it. All right. And these resources will be available below this podcast for people who are interested.
And then for our public service announcement, I wanted to share some groups, which are more affordable than individual or couples therapy. Mm-hmm. since costs, you know, therapy costs are so prohibitive to so many of us. And these are all groups that are based out of the Torrance area, and they can be found in the Psychology Today Therapist Finder directory. The first one is called Saving Marriage After an Affair.
Okay.
And the therapist's name is Carol Francis. I believe she's a licensed marriage family therapist at LMFT. And her phone number is 310-421-2863. 310-421-2863. Second group is Creating Healthy Relationships for Women. It's a women's group, it sounds like. Mm-hmm. This is run or facilitated by Bonnie Kay. I believe she's also a licensed marriage family therapist in Torrance area. Her phone number is 424-294-8108, 424-294-8108. And then the third and last one I'm going to mention is Grandparents Raising Grandchildren. Grandparents
need
support too. So Leslie Silverstone, licensed marriage family therapist, 310-331-8983, 310-331-8983.
Wonderful. And again, these will be included below this podcast.
Thanks, Dan.
And yeah, thank you, Heidi. This was wonderful. And we just want to say thank you, viewers and listeners. We appreciate you. And I just want to say, find your fun, and don't be afraid to ask for what you need.
Oh, I like it. And I'm going to say to all the listeners, boundaries keep us safe.
There you go. Tune in, and we hope to see you next time. Thank you, everyone.
See you next time.